Today on Rambling About Cars, we have debuts coming out of our bottom. New York Auto Show has been a big thing. We've got BMW 7 Series, i7, Ferrari 296, Lexus RZ, Mercedes EQS SUV, Subaru Outback, Hyundai, Jeep. Whew. And you're going to want to hang out for the end because we have a very, very cool off-road drag race that you absolutely have to see. So without further ado, it is podcast time. I'm Christopher Smith, and I toss it across the way to Chris Bruce. Bruce, tell us who we have with us here today.
Sure thing. We've got Brandon Turkus with us. He was at the aforementioned Desert Drag Race and was also a participant in it. So he will be telling us all about that in the second half of the show. And we also have Seth Miersma with us. And Seth, you had a critique of last week's episode. I think, go ahead.
No.
Totally valid.
Yes. Yeah.
So I listen, as all of you do, to the podcast, and I caught the, I think, very well-intentioned, we had a listener watcher email about a conspiracy theory, and you guys had a really good time talking about the conspiracy theory, which was essentially that because of Toyota and Subaru's involvement, that perhaps Subaru was, had cut the upcoming STI to make room for the Toyota's GR Corolla, right? And I actually, like, I agree. It was really fun. It was a fun conversation. I think you guys did did right by the listeners with it. I will only say that Motor One as an organization, so I'm the editor-in-chief. I'm the one who has to be sort of the bad guy in a lot of cases. I just want to be very clear. We have zero actual information that rumor is true. Like, we don't want to purport things that are not true. So Mr. Bruce and Mr. Smith got a little bit of a conversation with me after we had that after that podcast, just simply to say, like, again, I'm the fun police. They're having fun. You guys are talking about what the internet wants to hear, and I'm here to say, like, interesting story, zero to back it up. Highly unlikely that any of it is actually relevant.
Yes.
Readers or watchers, viewers and listeners, please still write in. Tell me why I'm wrong. we can deal with all of that, right?
But I just Rui Rika, thanks for getting us in trouble.
Yes, podcast at motor1.com is the email. No, Seth is absolutely right. As Motor One, absolutely nothing to that. It is what it is. But Seth, we really appreciate the feedback. We appreciate you coming on. But you're really on. Right now, the listeners are like, oh, geez, they got the editor-in-chief on. They must have really screwed up. No. Seth is really on because he was at the New York Auto Show.
That's right.
That is just wrapping up as this podcast is posting. And without many auto shows happening here in the last couple of years, Seth had a really great vantage point, not just of the vehicles that were there, some of the debuts, but also just kind of like a take on the status of auto shows in general. And we are very much looking forward to that. How do we want to start this big old conversation? Because it is a big one.
Well, go ahead, Seth.
Well, all I was going to say is, like, I think it's interesting that this year, this is the first year since 2019, correct me if I'm wrong, that we've had an auto show in New York in person, live, right? Like,
correct.
With cars on the stage. And, one thing that's very telling of the kind of way that this New York auto show went down, it was amazing that it was there, right? Amazing to be back there in person is, usually when Motor One is covering a big auto show, we come in force, right? You know, we've got a team there creating content, interviewing people, sort of covering it live and in person and on the ground. And the fact is, I was the only one who was there, right? And I think that's actually, in and of itself, sort of speaks volumes as to the way that both media and automakers were approaching the auto show this year, right? So there was still a very high level of cautiousness about whether or not the investment, and it's a very big investment for an automaker to have a debut and a stage at an international auto show, especially in New York, whether or not that investment was going to get borne out, like in the coverage that they would get in the public, reception that they would get when the public show opens and things like that. So a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about, I think, is really interesting, but we're going to talk about a lot of debuts that happened kind of last week. A lot of them had a physical presence in New York but not all of them will be there at the Jacob Javits Center if you are in New York and you're walking through, right? So that in and of itself is a really, to me, like an interesting sort of state of the union for where kind of big in-person auto shows are right now. And it'll be interesting to see where they net out, right, as we go forward.
Right. And that's an interesting take because BMW is among them. BMW, mm-hmm. I mean, there was the X7, and then more recently we have the new 7 Series and the i7. None of those were actually physically at the New York show, correct? But they still had a debut in New York.
Yeah, so I went to the debut program, and I guess, like, I should say this, I haven't been back. I don't think that they have, I'm 98% positive that they don't have any physical presence at the show, but they didn't debut this at the show. They debuted it literally, you know, like within blocks of the Javits Center in another space. You know, they had all the same media there. It was on day two of the quote unquote media days of the show, but they did their own thing, right? Mm-hmm. And they did this. This is something that, you know, Brandon can probably speak to this. This is not like a new thing for covering auto shows. Like, sure, automakers have been looking for white space around the actual, you know, event itself for a long time. But we saw a little bit more of this year in New York, including BMW. So BMW did a kind of morning day two launch of 7 Series and i7. X7 was there as well. A ton of media were invited. I was there with maybe, I don't know, 50, 60 other journalists, including some of our friends from Inside EVs and other people that we work with as freelance writers and things like that. So it was a big event, but it wasn't actually on the show floor.
Well, let's dive into 7 Series because we talked about X7 a little bit last week. And if you didn't catch that episode, you want to go to our YouTube channel, Motor One Podcast, where you can catch last week's episode. You can also get us on Spotify, Google, Apple. We're on like a dozen different streaming platforms. And of course, you want to go to MotorOne.com where you can read all about the X7, the new 7 Series, the i7. We have debut articles there. But let's talk a little bit about 7 Series because it has... I mean, we have to address it right up front. I mean, it has the same kind of split headlight design that the X7 has. And I think that's going to be something that people are going to be talking about. And we've certainly had conversations in our Slack chat, or sorry, Teams chat. It's been like 3 freaking years since we had Slack. We've talked about it in our Teams chat. And I don't know that, I mean, this is controversial styling, but it's kind of growing on me. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
So real quick, I think one other thing that's worth mentioning is that the 7 Series has been BMW's flagship for decades now. This is kind of the flagship BMW product. And a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times, the styling that you see on the 7 Series, the cues you see, they trickle down to the 5 Series or the 3 Series. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we don't know for certain, but this could be a preview of what BMWs look like in the future. And so that makes this all the more interesting because this has a new styling language, new design language for the company. It's Seth, I know we were talking about this in the Slack chat Teams.
You're not the only one, or I'm not the only one.
Exactly. It has this super high like shoulder line. It's very flat and angular. It's an interesting look and kind of a surprising look. So
very, very high belt line on it. So, and first of all, I don't even think it's fair to say that it was maybe evenly divided. I'm curious. I don't know, Brandon, if I got your take on it, but here's my thing. I can see again. So what is BMW doing? BMW is doing big kidney grills. They're changing their lighting signatures for their vehicles. And they've been doing this for what? 3 years now? They're doing it in a way that's causing a lot of people a lot of kind of heartburn who love BMW and they expect it to look a certain way. This is also par for the course for BMW in terms of like moving their, when they change their design language, it causes a lot of enthusiasts pain, right? They're like, well, I like the last thing. And now we're doing this new thing and I don't really understand it and it doesn't make sense. And then it kind of reaches a point of equilibrium. And I think this is, in my mind, what we're looking at, right? That the 7 Series wears this language a little bit better. They've toned it down a little bit. The car that you're flipping through right now, especially with the blacked out like front treatment, really minimizes the effect. It still is quite a large grill. It's also framed in LEDs. So it really is drawing attention to it too. They're not hiding this. They know what they're doing, and they are pushing that forward. I think that it's a really interesting car and kind of a complicated car, but not for the face that I think gets a lot of attention. I think that there are other design elements that are happening, including the eye belt line and the sort of way the shoulders fold over, that are maybe not like an ideal large luxury sedan look for me. But overall, the presence is huge. I think it does what a 7 Series is supposed to do. It kind of impresses you. It's going to look like it's, 80 feet long on the street. You know what I mean? It's got a lot of presence when you actually put it out in the real world.
Oh, it does.
I think that'll impress. But I know that it's not an easy styling language to just look at and be like, beautiful, right? It's not obviously beautiful in any way outside.
It's not beautiful, but especially this black one. And for anyone who's watching on YouTube, I will swap over to the other gallery we have of this, which is in silver. It's specifically the i7, the electric model that we'll talk about here in a second. So you'll get to see kind of the different looks. But in black, this thing just looks so menacing, and it just looks mean and menacing and angry. It looks like a car a villain would drive, and it just, I really like it. In the other colors, it's, maybe that's going to make a difference, but I think black, it conceals a lot of the design flourishes in a way that just makes this design look better to me.
Brandon, I'm really curious to hear your take on this.
Yeah, I tweeted about this earlier today, and shortly after the debut, and I'm kind of apathetic to BMW design at this point. Like they haven't done any, or the company hasn't done anything in the past several years that I've really been blown away by. And I'm past the point of being annoyed or upset about it. It's just there, and no amount of rage tweeting is going to change that.
Rage tweeting.
I will say, looking at it critically, I see a lot of 2 Series Grand Coupe in the rear end, which I don't find a great look. I'm more concerned by the split headlights, which is kind of a trendy thing from a few years ago that I thought that trend was on its way out. And I say this as a person that really liked the Bengal 7 Series from the early 2000s or mid 2000s. I enjoy
like
that
the
design. Yeah, I do. I do. But more importantly, I think that design has aged beautifully. I see one on the road, and I still find it attractive today. I'm really concerned that this vehicle will not age especially well. It's just so trendy and in the now, like BMW. Whereas the 7 Series, when that one came out, it was really pushing the envelope forward. And, it's the 2 Series back end. It's the split headlights, which, like I said, are kind of an old fashioned thing. I don't see it aging terribly well. But at the same time, I can't get excited about BMW design anymore. I understand what they're trying to do. I understand that it appeals to the Chinese market, and I fully respect BMW focusing on China in this way. It's just, It's not doing anything for me, and I'm past the point of really, feeling strongly one way or the other about it.
It's not provocative to you anymore. In other words, like, which is
no, it's not actually. Yeah. I was actually just thinking this. The thing that worries me more is that it is not graceful. And you look at those big luxury cars, and part of the reason that they don't seem quite so offensive is that there's a degree of grace to them. If you see an Audi A8 like gliding down the road, or an S-Class, it is a graceful design. This is brutal though, and I think that kind of exacerbates the size of the thing. And I think you guys like the black one so much is because it minimizes that.
It hides the things that people might find critical, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a fair critique, Brandon. And actually, when you say that, what it reminds me of is, I still have this feeling about it, but I remember the overall conversation around, God, it's like 2 generations ago now, but like 2 S-Class ago. And I don't remember the, I don't remember the model designation either, but it came out. It had a crazy body side for the time, like sort of flared fenders, but they were flattened out. And it was the first time that we had seen those before. I'm talking about sort of mid, like early.
This is like 08 to like 2014,
exactly.
I want to say.
Yeah. So that 7 series had the same thing where it went from being like slightly more elegant, still a very large car, but like a simple but elegant body side into this thing that was like very multifaceted and complicated. And it just seemed like they were trying to turn it into sort of an SUV, right? Like on the road. And I think people sort of matured into that, but like it felt really strange for a long time. And it felt like it was doing something that you didn't expect an S-Class to do at the time. I have that same vibe from this car a little bit, like from the exterior styling. Again, very imposing, menacing, big. You're wealthy if you're driving it. Like, you know, it's doing a lot of work in messaging something about the actual owner or driver or passenger in that case. But I don't know that it's something that, I don't know if we're ever going to look at it and be like, that's a really pretty BMW design.
You know, so I think you can see it in the reflection over my,
who's this guy in the green shirt? By the way?
I was wondering that as well.
Roland from
that is Roland Hildebrandt from Motor One Germany. For the readers that don't know, European journalists on the whole love having their pictures taken with the cars.
Okay.
He does that with all of the galleries that he does.
I'd never seen him before. Okay.
It's almost become a meme. Like every time I see a drive program with like European media or something like that, they're all getting their picture taken with the car. I don't understand it. I will never understand it. I apologize that you all have to see me now. I don't want to foist that on anyone. So
Roland's a lovely guy. Really.
Roland is awesome. I love Roland.
But I didn't expect that to be your answer. That's really funny.
But no, what I was going to say is like, and you can see it in the reflection on my poster over right here.
Zoom in, everybody. The screen, man.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that. I don't know what I'm doing.
Press the share button.
Well, we got to try to move on.
I have a high three-quarter. Of the 7 series up, I actually see in the front end especially a little bit of Rolls-Royce Ghost. I'm not for like sure, BMW does not badge engineer cars, but like if you look at it from the firewall forward, it's go a little bit left, a couple images left, if you don't mind.
I can see what you're on about.
There's a degree of like dash to axle and like firewall forward. Like there's some Rolls-Royce Ghost going on, and that's not the worst thing in the world. I think it's just a very specific kind of statement.
So the longer I look at this, it's not just the black car anymore. It's even this one. It's the super chiseled, crisp lines. Mm-hmm. I like this car. I like the looks of it.
It is growing on me. And everybody that listens knows I've been a little critical of BMW over the years. So I'm a little surprised by this as well. Maybe it's going to go somewhere. Let's rattle off some stats really quick.
Design is subjective, but let's get down to some brass tacks here. So there will be 3 powertrains available at launch. You'll have the 740i that's with a turbocharged 3-liter inline 6, making 375 horsepower, 383 pound-feet of torque. Also, it's worth mentioning that powertrain, it now has 48-volt mild hybrid assist. Mm-hmm. There's also the 760i xDrive. That is a 4.4-liter turbocharged V8, again, with mild hybrid assist. That gets you 536 horsepower, 553 pound-feet of torque. And then the really special, interesting, the new addition to the lineup is the i7, which they are badging as the i7 xDrive 60. That has the equivalent of 536 horsepower, 549 pound-feet of torque. You get a 101.7 kilowatt-hour battery. And what range for the U.S. is estimated to be around 300 miles. We don't have a firm number yet.
Yeah, that's just an estimate at this point. It fast charges at 195 kilowatts. It can get 80 miles per range in 10 minutes. That was a little surprising to me. That was a little bit low for the segment. They do give you 3 years of free charging through Electrify America. So if it's going to take a little bit longer, at least you're not going to pay for it, right?
I'll say this, and I'm somewhat talking out of my ass here because I haven't really done a lot of research on this, but there are always compromises in when you design a car to accept both gas or combustion engines and mm-hmm. electrification. I doubt this thing has an 800-volt architecture. Seth, correct me if I'm wrong, but if it doesn't, 195 kilowatts is damn fast for a 400 volt car.
I will say, like, there was a lot of conversation about that in the early going, like when we were at the event too, and they were not, we didn't have any digital materials, frankly, when we were there. We're sort of we heard the presentation, we're taking notes, and we're talking about it, right? But like things like that that you're talking about, Brandon, like the building this car to accept like both ICE powertrains and battery electric. The thing that was blowing the minds of, so I was there with Tom Malagni from Inside EVs, who's been around EVs for since they've existed, basically, and a bunch of other guys. They were really like pressing on why the i7 doesn't have a frunk, for instance. Like, what is it in the build of this car? Like, you would think there's a space that where a large engine should go in the ICE version that's wide open for storage, and it's not there, right? So like the way that they build it is not ideal for, I would say. I think that's fair for an EV. I'm not saying that it will be a bad EV by any stretch of the imagination. It could be quite impressive. In fact, I'm pretty positive it'll be impressive in one way or the other. But they're absolutely not doing the kind of Tesla thing where they're maximizing the platform or the vehicle specifically to be a world-class electric vehicle.
Well, you know what? And the thing is, they don't necessarily need to, like, especially related to the frunk thing. The EQS doesn't have a frunk either. You can't even open the hood on an EQS.
Sure.
So I'm sure they looked at that and said, well, why the hell would we spend the budget engineering this? And I got to imagine it'd be a huge engineering job to retrofit a frunk to an EV version of a gas powered vehicle when our biggest competitor isn't doing it.
Yeah,
agreed.
That's a good argument. Before we move on, can we just talk for a quick second about the 8K 31 inch screen that's in the back seat of this thing? That's massive. it's a movie screen in the back seat. I mean, what are your takes on that really quick? Because I mean, it's neat from a standpoint of it's a 31 inch screen.
Right.
What practical application does that have in a car, even in the back seat?
I mean, certainly entertaining. Like, it's a selling point. We're talking about it. Also, I'm pretty sure the first TV I ever had, like when I was a kid, was 12 or 14 inches. And so it's just amazing that you can get a 31 inch screen in a car. And yeah, you're right. To my knowledge, 8K, like 8K movies, 8K entertainment doesn't really exist in a mass produced way yet. I mean, the cameras are there, but no one's really releasing it, but it's going to look cool.
Is this going to come with barf bags? Because people trying to watch this screen while you're going down the road? It's neat, but I don't know. I think it's kind of ridiculous.
I mean, my concern is more practical than that. I've had this concern for a few years now. Is, you know, you look at the pace that the auto industry is improving, and you look at the amount of software that is being crammed into cars, and you have to wonder, like, how long are these automakers going to support this technology? How long are they going to push out software updates? How long are they going to offer the telematics information? What happens when they move on to the next big thing? And so for someone buying this car, you know, the third owner that is just looking like, I really love this design, I want this, what kind of like ownership experience are they going to be in for? Because they may be living in a world where they just don't have manufacturer support for all this crazy technology in the cars.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, I know exactly how BMW and PR would answer this right now, right? Because they made a big point. In fact, like, I've considered, we might still be working up a small story about this, right? But the BMW team made a really big point of saying that they now have the largest fleet of over-the-air updatable cars on the road. Right. So that struck me, because in my mind that crown goes to Tesla, but apparently BMW has numbers that say otherwise. So I think that what they would say is that we are future-proofing the cars just in the same way that Tesla would say the same thing. You look at a Model S, when was Model S launched, right? Like, it can still theoretically have a lot of the coolest, newest, everything really that can be updated with software because you can do it OTA. So,
but there is a sunset on this development.
Sure, of course, yeah. Yeah, so, totally. I mean, they're also like asking you to pay a subscription for everything involved. I think I'm more interested in that, right? So they're looking at cars as things that original owners, quote unquote, are like taking possession of for a much shorter period of time and then moving on to something else. So it's much more lease based, subscription based, shorter period of time. Wow, people right away. Bruce is going to buy it because it's got a TV bigger than the one that he had in his room when he was 10 years old, right? And I'm sure it's amazing. Like,
well, I'm just going to wait for 15 years when this is going for like, you know, $6,000 because it cost $100,000 to fix, and then just put some big wheels and tires on it and turn it into an Overlander.
Or just park it in the garage and just watch the 8K display. That's right. Just turn it into a home theater.
Yeah.
Guys, we need to jump onto some other cars here. We're probably going to have to we're probably going to have to triage this a little bit. What do we want to talk about next? Lexus RZ, Mercedes EQS, Ferrari. Do you want to talk about the Ferrari really quick? That should be a pretty quick one.
Let's hit Ferrari real quick because it's basically so the Ferrari 296 GTS debuted this week. It is essentially the 296 GTB, except it's a convertible. And it actually doesn't, I would love to see a video, and I haven't seen one yet, of the roof in operation, because it is a convertible. The roof goes down in 14 seconds, but when you look at it in the images, it appears to just have a removable kind of hardtop thing. So I don't know if it's like a Porsche, the modern Porsche Targa thing, where the whole rear clamshell comes up and it goes in there. I haven't seen a video yet, so I'd be very curious to see such a thing.
I mean, they designed it so, you can still look into the engine bay and see the wonderful engine back there, which still makes 663 horsepower on its own. But then when you pair it with the electric motor, it's 830 horsepower. Yeah, I mean, it's a screaming fast Ferrari with no roof. Is there much more we need to say about it? After looking at the BMW, this is kind of like a moment, right?
Incredibly impressive. Most likely I'll never drive one. I think the answer to the roof is I do think it fits under that entire, like, I think that entire like rear right behind the driver clamshell comes up.
And yeah. I assume goes it in does. There. I just want to see it happen. I want to see the Me origami too. Make it fit.
I think it's incredibly cool that they're melding sort of a six cylinder with this hybrid assist. And I think it's going to be, you know, all of everything for anyone who wants to drive fast. So I also wish they would give us like real photos and not these like super, super retouched kind of rendering looking photos of the thing. But
automakers, like as a general rule, and there are a few that are worse about this than others. I'm thinking of one that's not far down the road from me here in Detroit. You can take a guess at who that is. these kind of photos are terrible. Give us real world photos. Awful. Yeah. Give us real world photos, one color, one trim, 50 or 60 of them, please.
Well,
there are
you
lots
know what,
of amazingly talented photographers out there. Yeah.
Yep.
So let's hit Mercedes-Benz EQS SUV real quick, which, as its name implies, it is the SUV version of the Mercedes-Benz EQS. Mm-hmm. They share the same platform, but if you go with the SUV version, you can, as an option, you can get a third row of seats. And that image we're looking at now, you can see it there in the back. So you can get 5 or 7 seat variants. Cool, big kind of family-ish luxury EV. They made a tweak to the powertrain that I'm trying to find.
We've got the
there, Smith.
Well, I know we've got the 450, right? The 450 that's available single motor or dual motor as an option, 355 horsepower on that. There's the 580, which is standard dual motor. That's got 536 horsepower. And isn't it interesting that the EQS SUV and the BMW have the exact same amount of power? I'm just now realizing that, and I'm hoping I didn't write my notes down looking at BMW instead of Mercedes on that. They're advertising 373 mile range, which I think is pretty good, but that's in the European
that's
cycle.
That's WLTP, which is generally a bit higher,
it's generally a bit aggressive. But it's got 200 kilowatt charging, goes from 10 to 80 mile range in 31 minutes. I mean, that's kind of the crux of the performance. Looks wise, I mean, we know Mercedes is, I mean, with their EQ vehicles, they're definitely differentiating them from their standard internal combustion vehicles. I mean, I don't think it looks bad. I just don't know that it grabs the attention that maybe it should, being an EQS.
I think the the inherent design traits of the EQ line, if you look at the EQS and to a lesser extent the EQE, I think this is the best execution of them. I think a two-box shape. Okay. I think the two-box shape of the EQS SUV really, really benefits the design language. You're able to kind of hide that like swooping rear window a lot better. I think it's got a great stance, like that image, both of these images that you're showing right now, like it looks really good. I think the proportions are more natural. The EQS especially is always looked a little bit cumbersome to me, and I don't really get that here. I dig it. I think the hyperscreen is cool but dumb, especially after seeing the non-hyperscreen dashes in the EQE, which Brett Evans talked about in his first drive of that. I dig it. I'm super excited to drive it. Super, super excited to drive it.
All SUVs look the same, basically.
Yeah.
So all right, kind of cool. This is the one everybody's gonna buy, right? Like if you own an EQS if you own an EQ series Mercedes in the first generation, there's going to be a giant chance that you own this car. Is that fair to say? Am I talking to my ass there?
No. They'll get the EQE SUV. This is going to be too expensive. SUVs will be friggin' everywhere in the next 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, I think it looks cool. I think Mercedes is just killing it with interiors. I haven't driven a car with a hyperscreen yet. I've got to get one of those to understand it. But I recognize like that what you're saying. It's probably like, you know, like flashbang, impressing a ton of people.
It's a statement piece.
Does it matter day to day? Probably not. Right. No. But cool. But I mean, like, great that they're, I think Mercedes is coming to market with a very cohesive, really interesting, well-realized segment. They don't even have a product, right? They have nailed the segment. And I think that there's a strong case to be made that they might be the rabbit that everybody else is chasing right now in terms of luxury EV with what they're doing. So totally I will fair. Say that.
Yeah, like, I mean,
massive kudos to them.
And even from a technical standpoint, the cars have the range. They have the charging capacity, the ability to fast charge at I want to say, shit, I can't remember. I mean, they're up there. They're well past 250 kilowatts for DC fast charging. And they're brilliant to drive. I mean, I've driven the EQS 450 and the AMG, and both of them are fantastic to drive.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's too much of a speculation to think that there's going to be an AMG version of the EQS SUV, since there's already an AMG.
No, there absolutely will be. There absolutely will be.
That's not
the Mercedes thing is AMG all the things. I mean, there will be
a segment for everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There will unquestionably be an EQS SUV AMG, which is just too many damn alphanumerics.
Too many three letter groups.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you've got a third of the alphabet in there. So
Some old car guy on his porch will have a stroke trying to like read it or say it. We're positive of that. But no, like it does feel very, feels again, I have to get it. I haven't driven any of these yet, but like from an outside, like, you know, everybody, probably most people watching, like, I'm incredibly impressed with what they're showing us right now. So
from one electric crossover to another, we got to see the Lexus RZ 450e. This is the sibling. It rides on the same platform as Smith and I's favorite whipping boy, just because of its name, the Toyota BZ4X, which you think sounds like a robot from Star Wars.
It sounds like a stormtrooper designation.
One of our a mutual friend of Seth and I, who works at another publication, I'll leave him nameless, asked the question at the debut of the BZ4X, why did you name it after a copy machine?
That works
and
too.
I want the record to show that I asked him that, and then he asked Toyota in front of a huge group of journalists.
Well done.
But yeah, BZ4X is fine. The name's terrible. I actually really like this. I think this is a two-tone design done right. I love the black hood. I love that it's black from nose to tail on the top, you know, third, mm-hmm. I think that's great.
Real quick, the other member of this family is the Subaru Solterra. All three have the same platform. Mm-hmm. The BZ4X has slightly different styling, whereas it's as close to a rebadge as to not quite be able to call it that between the BZ4X and the Solterra. This one actually has some design changes.
Actually, I'm ashamed to say I'm looking at this for the first time. I really dig it. This might be my favorite Lexus design in several years.
Guys,
I like it.
I don't know. Guys,
I like it. I think it looks great. I love that color too. That matte.
Look
rose.
At that. Hold on. Yeah. Freeze there.
That's bad. That's bad. Yeah. Go. The wheel well is bad.
Yep.
Well, just lower it a little bit.
I could fit my head between the tire and the wheel arch.
I gotta say, and this is starting to worry me a little bit, because listeners will also be familiar of my general hatred of Lexus and their big spindly grill. But I kind of like this too. Damn it, Brandon.
Well, wait one second. We gotta talk about the yoke.
The yoke can burn and die in a fire. I hate the yoke. Kill you.
Yeah, the yoke.
Tesla, that only works. What did you do to us? And automakers, why are you? Did you think that was a good idea?
Well, hold on. Let's not blame Tesla, okay? Tesla was just ripping off Knight Rider.
Okay.
because Tesla, hey, we have our car that's self driving now, so it's gonna have a. I'm just waiting for Anthony Daniels to get on board with Tesla, and all of a sudden, Kit's gonna start talking to you, right? Yeah, the yoke. I mean. I hate to say, don't reinvent
the
wheel.
Anthony Daniels was C-3PO, not
yeah.
Anthony Daniels was not
Mr. Feeny from Mr. Boy Meets World.
Yeah,
Feeny
was
Knight Rider.
Wait,
Feeny.
Anthony? No, it was Anthony. Somebody that was voicing Kit for Knight Rider, wasn't it?
No, it was the guy that played Mr. Feeny.
Yeah.
All right, we'll have to look it up and put it in the article. Yes. Anyways, Loke. The yoke in the Lexus.
William Daniels. That's why
okay. you're there. William Daniels. I was like 50% right, guys.
Yeah, you got
it
the
It wouldn't
last.
Be a podcast if I got something really wrong. The Billy yoke Daniels. In the Lexus. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. Yeah. Gimmicky. I've never driven one. You're going to get better visibility of the instrument cluster because at some point, all of us have had some visibility issues. Okay. The wheel is.
And yet it has a HUD.
Which you can see better now from any seating position. Hey, how about this? The yoke makes you put your hands where your hands are supposed to go on the wheel. Number one, number two, you don't need the top part of the wheel unless you're a friggin' rally driver, right? Like, what are you doing in this car? Like,
you're right. But here's the thing. The one time where you do need it for an emergency situation, for an emergency situation, something happens and you're trying to make some quick corrections. The one time you will need it, it won't be there.
My question with the yoke is how fast is the steering ratio? How fast is the steering ratio to make up for the fact that you have 50% of a steering wheel to grab?
I mean, the steering ratio isn't a result of the diameter of the wheel.
Right. But what I'm saying is the steering, you know, the ratio is angle of steering input to angle of wheel turn. And how fast does it have to be if you can only turn it like this? And you can only turn it 180 degrees.
I'm just being a pain in the ass right now. I don't think that I would actually like the yoke driving it either, but I don't actually see like, there's no, we're talking about it. Like there might be like a real functional problem for who is the, like, you know, we're talking an average Lexus driver too. There won't be performance driving implications in this. Like, you know,
yeah, but Seth, we need to stop this before the next Corvette has a yoke. Like we need to come out strong.
That would make sense.
No, it totally wouldn't make sense. No,
that would make more sense to me. Yes. Actually Corvette yoke, I think would be, C9 Corvette with a yoke. I'm all in on it. Let's do it.
Damn it. Oh, man.
Yeah.
So real quick, just power specs for this. So Lexus is calling it the RZ450E. It makes a total system output of 308 horsepower. Sorry. You've got an electric motor at the front axle, electric motor at the back axle. What makes that interesting, though, is that the all-wheel drive versions of the BZ4X and Solterra only have 215 total system horsepower. So you're getting a power bump there. Estimated range right now is 225 miles from a 71.4 kilowatt hour battery pack. Again, we're not going to know for certain until the EPA tests it, but they're thinking 225 miles.
How big is this thing? Can somebody tell me? I've yet to.
It's BZ4X size, so it's.
I know, but what does that mean?
I think it's like RAV4, smaller than Highlander.
Yeah, I think it's real awkward, you guys. I actually think this might be the worst design language on this platform that I've seen so far. Some cool paint. I've always been a huge fan of Lexus paint. The wheels are weird. The arches are weird. The front end is real pinched. And
the arches should be body color.
The stance feels like it's going at a crazy angle front to rear.
My bigger concern, and this extends to the BZ4X and the Solterra, is here is and John Volker, who you know I have tremendous respect for, like one of the best EV journalists in the game, covered the BZ4X for us, and he made some great points. I'm really concerned about the lack of range, which is saying something because I think range is kind of irrelevant in the grand scheme, but the lack of range in a new product being rolled out in 2022 is kind of unacceptable. And the DC fast charging is not especially great. Yep. And that's a worrying combination when both of those things are lagging behind. You look at Ioniq 5, you look at Genesis GV60, which I'm going to drive next week. Like those are both in terms of range and charging speed where the industry needs to be, the legacy automakers need to be. And it's worrying that one of the largest, or are they the largest? Is Toyota the biggest now? I can't remember.
As of last year, they were.
Yeah, they're the largest automaker on the planet, and this is what they roll out.
Yeah,
you know,
spend all your Toyota bucks in the next 5 years on some sort of Gazoo product. Answer.
Yeah, get yourself a GR Corolla. You'll be thrilled. Yeah. It's going to be amazing.
But I'm going to try.
Seth, I want it. I might be as well. I wanted to give you one last opportunity to finish us out here before we move on to our other topic, because you got to check out the ID Buzz. And Brandon, you've also got to check out the ID Buzz. Smith and I are orphans, but you got to see the ID Buzz at the New York Auto Show. And it just so happened today, we got some spy shots of the long wheelbase version testing. So we did.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I missed those. Wow. Yeah,
I completely missed those.
Euro
too.
Van. Very Eurovan in that white out.
Well, I mean, it's a test mule, but it's still the long wheelbase. Talk to us about ID Buzz. What did you think of it? Getting up and close and personal.
Brandon knows more than me. I got a great walk around. I was in New York with Volkswagen. It's a thing. And what I really want to say is, like, if you do have a chance still to go to the show, I think go check out the Volkswagen stand. I think it's an incredibly impressive product. Very cool. I've had more conversations with real people about the ID Buzz than I would have ever expected in the last couple of weeks, because I think that it sort of touches a nerve culturally. A lot of people understand, like, obviously Volkswagen buses, microbuses, right? Like, they, like, it resonates with people. Practically speaking, for me, again, if you guys aren't watching or you haven't seen, you know, me do a video before, I'm a giant man. It's a car that, like, will accommodate all kinds of people very well, right? I had maybe 4 or 5 inches of headroom when I sat in it. It's got all kinds of space. And we're in the short wheelbase, like, Euro version of it too, right? So I think that it's going to be an incredibly practical thing that people who, especially, folks who tend to love cars, always like vans or small vans because they're so practical. The EV-ness of it, I think, won't be particularly overwhelmingly good. But I think, honestly, I kind of think when you combine the retro vibes, the packaging, the general practicality of the EV part of it, I think that you're going to get a product that resonates with a lot of people as a second car, for instance. So,
well, I think this is, and with respect for the electric Mini, I think this is the first proper lifestyle EV.
Sure.
Yep.
I've driven Tesla Roadster.
Well, good one. I've driven a 67 bus. I've driven the last Eurovan that was sold in the US. I have a ton of experience with it. The vibes that I got from sitting in this and crawling around this, I did a video shoot with it in Hamburg, Germany back in February, which feels like 9 million years ago. It's uncanny how much it reminds me of both of those products, you know, the 67 especially, the upright seating position, the amount of space that you have in the cabin, the short overhangs, it's so well done as like a tribute vehicle, and to the point that like, and like all good lifestyle vehicles, you're able to I think people will be able to overlook the shortcomings as an EV and enjoy the lifestyle aspects that it promises. I have the spy shots of the long wheelbase. If I recall correctly, the long wheelbase is only about 3 inches longer than the short wheelbase. So that's negligible. I don't think American consumers are losing anything. We're not, you know, it's going to look just as interesting. It's going to be a little bit roomier. I think it's going to be great. I hope it does well for Volkswagen. I really like the ID4. I think the ID3 looks fantastic. I think this is the vehicle that they need. I think that the industry is waiting for a proper lifestyle product that people buy, not because it's an EV, but because it looks cool and it brings something unique to the table and makes a statement other than I care about the environment.
No, I agree. And I've heard just quite a bit of chatter on the interwebs where people aren't sure that it's going to be a good seller. And I really hope that they're wrong. I like the retroness of this. I think it's a really good fit for Volkswagen people that are looking for a new family vehicle, that don't necessarily want an SUV, that don't necessarily want a sedan. And I think it could bring in people from outside the Volkswagen community as well, because it has that retro vibe. And I agree, Brandon. I think this will win, not because it's an EV, but because it's just a cool van, right? I mean the original bus people, they weren't buying it because it had some fantastic engine, right? I mean, yeah. You know, 0 to 60.
No, I could get mine over 65 miles an hour.
Right. So, in this instance, I think the powertrain takes a back seat, but I tend to think maybe people are trying to put it in the front seat. It's a great lifestyle vehicle. I'm really jealous that both of you guys have had a chance to see it. I really want to see it in person. I really want to see what it's like behind the wheel.
Totally.
Yeah, I'll go on record as saying, alongside GR Corolla, that's probably the vehicle I'm most excited to drive in the next year or so. I'm super, super excited to drive ID Buzz. I think it's going to be great.
And I would, to your sales point, I don't know, like, we're in such a weird market right now, but I would put a month's paycheck on the fact that when it goes on sale in the US, that this is a wait list, sold out car
absolutely
6 months. For sure.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a lot of pent up demand for stuff. And I think this is going to be very high profile. Again, when strangers that I don't know particularly well and find out that I write about cars, like, are asking me specifically about this and they know the name of it, like, that's a real indicator that it's got some early buzz, if you'll pardon the pun.
Oh, look at you.
I know. Sorry.
Put a dollar in the pun jar.
Damn it.
So wait, there's a pun jar? I'm like seriously in debt here, guys.
Yeah, Adrian's our coworker Adrian has been, ever since he's become a father, he has become the king of the pun. He is the king of the dad joke more or less recently. So he's got some euros to put in there. Wanted to read one comment real quick from last week before we transition and let Brandon talk. Oh, Smith, do you have something to say real quick?
No, I was just going to try to do some witty pun transition that was going to fail. So please save me from that.
Well, I'm going to stop you from doing that. So, So, our frequent commenter, he's commented in the past, Harf of Jar, who I've been confused by his username before, but he wrote kind of our longest comment that we got last week, so that's why I'm reading this one. And last week we talked about the X7 facelift, which also debuted at the New York Auto Show, which, if you're curious, that's why we didn't talk about it. If you're curious about our thoughts on the X7, go back to last week and you can hear all about it. So here's what Harf of Jar has to say. I don't mind how the X7 facelift looks, to be honest. It's certainly an improvement over the pre-facelift, which looked like a scaled up X5 with not so great proportions. I think the shock of the XM concept has softened the blow of the reaction to the design of this one. Agreed that it definitely looks better with when you dechrome the trim and darker colors rather than the chintzy look of the non-M Sport cars. Love the show, guys. Keep it up, and a flexing emoji. So
flexing.
Apparently harf jar is some sort of Arabic preposition, according to what the internet says right away. So
okay. Well,
everything the internet says is true.
Sure.
But Brandon, now it's your time to shine, man, because you went out to California. It's almost a month ago now, right? Is it a month?
Yeah,
3 weeks?
Yeah. If February is 9 million years ago, this is only about 4 million years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, no. So we set up, it's going to be a really interesting comparison. We did a drag race component on a dried out lake bed with the Jeep Wrangler 392, the Land Rover Defender V8, and the Mercedes AMG G63. And the general idea is that, you know, these are kind of the last three of the proper, like, ultra high performance V8 powered off-road SUVs. And so we did a comparison, but we also did a drag race, and it was interesting to me because they're three radically different price points. You know, the Jeep is about 80 grand. The Defender that we drove was 112, and the Mercedes was $186,000. So like, you're not going to see a huge overlap in terms of consumers, but like, as the last of the breed, it was a really interesting exercise to see how each one shaped up off-road, in a straight line, on public roads. We drove the things from Los Angeles to a place that has the most confusing name in the world. It's called Soggy Dry Lake Bed.
that's an oxymoron.
Dry has opposed to...
Soggy Dry Lake. Yeah,
let's cut that because I think we're supposed to keep that under wraps as our secret place to test off-road SUVs, but that's okay.
All right, well...
No.
California's in a drought right now. They're spoiled for dry lake beds.
That's right, yeah. We could have been anywhere.
Yeah,
that was one of 20 different locations we
checked
out the internet.
Yeah, and you know, we stuck them together. We measured out a quarter mile, and we let her rip, and you know, it was a lot of fun. It was interesting to see how three different automakers are approaching this kind of dying breed of vehicles, and all of them are extremely capable off road. They're crazy fast. You know, I don't know how much I can give away. When is this airing?
So we will be going up just after the video goes live. So
oh, you brilliant. Can say okay. anything
yeah. you want. Yeah, yeah. The video is live Friday.
Friday at 10 a.m.
Friday at 10 a.m. And we're going to go up basically at 10:01 a.m. So
perfect. Well,
so let her rip, man, because I especially want to hear about your commentary. Brett and Clint, they it seemed like they were kind of, oh yeah, well, we're gonna do this with, and you're just like, yeah, I'm in the Jeep, let's do this.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what, I had to embrace my inner Michigander for this one. Yeah. I insisted that I pick up the Defender V8 from the airport and drive it out there because I'm a huge Defender fan, and you know, a two-door D90 with 500 horsepower from that fantastic engine really appeals to me. But when it came to the race, I had to get into the Jeep. You know, I'm, you know, 4 miles outside Detroit, and yeah, it's the Jeep is just a riot. I think it didn't win the race. Anyone that has watched it will know that it did not win the race. It was last. but if you look at it, if you look at the fact that, you know, through the quarter mile on a dried lake bed, it was clipping 100 miles an hour. It finished just a little bit before or behind the other cars, but it was $80,000. I mean, it was $30,000 less than the Range Rover. It was $100,000 less than the G-Wagon, and it was almost as fast in the quarter. It was arguably the most capable off-road, especially in like slow, rocky terrain. It's an absolute feat. I'm thrilled that it exists. The Defender was, I'm tempering this a little bit. I was unmoved by the Defender. I was hoping for like an SVR experience where it's, you know, really wild, like all the exhaust noise and crazy fast and barely controllable. And it's more just a Defender with a V8. It was the second quickest in the drag race. Brett Evans was driving that. He was able to set up his own specific, you know, dry lake bed launch control mode, which was really fun. But yeah, I mean, the Defender is super cool, but the winner was, I mean, in by a pretty significant margin, the G63, which is just, it's a masterpiece of an SUV. It's worth every single penny that Mercedes is asking for it. But yeah, I'm just kind of rambling at this point. I don't know if you guys have any questions specifically about it.
Of course. Which one sounded the best?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so that's complicated. I think that
the side video pipes, the Jeep sounds the best. I don't know. Maybe it's the microphone.
Agreed, yeah.
In the video, the Jeep sounds the best.
The Jeep requires no manipulation. Like it has a dual mode exhaust, and you can turn the exhaust open and opens up baffles in there and makes it a little bit louder. I think it sounds the best. I think it sounds the most natural for a V8. It's classic like American V8 engine. The Mercedes sounded really great. Like I said, I was underwhelmed by the Defender. It just didn't have the volume that I was hoping for. But yeah, if we're talking like purely like ear tingling, my ears were tickled every single time I ran that Jeep down the quarter mile. It was a friggin' hoot.
So I'm curious, how about on the road? Because those, the Jeep specifically, because those big tires, big off-road tires, generally tires like that just make a racket when you're going down the highway, especially at speed.
Yeah.
What's it like to actually drive like a normal person on the road?
Yeah. So the day that we filmed this, we started out at about 7 a.m., got out to the desert. It was about an hour from where we were staying. And we were going, I mean, we were on the, shooting from about 8 a.m. until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then for reasons I'm still not really sure of, I ended up in the Jeep to drive the 3 hours back to L.A. to get in my hotel and fly out the next morning. And it was probably the worst decision I've made this year. I was exhausted by the end of it. It is extremely loud. That V8 sounds great, but it does drone. I didn't turn off the active exhaust because I feel like that's not okay. So right. even though I was deaf by the end of it and my back was broken and my internal organs were rearranged, it was a long drive. Okay. I'll just leave it at that. It was a very, very long drive.
Fair. But did you get a chance to drive all three, or were you purely in the Jeep?
Yeah, no. Time? I mean, I've driven all three. I drove the Defender from LAX to the testing site. I've got a ton of experience with the G63, so I didn't spend as much time in there. Mm-hmm. But if it were my money, it's such a tough choice between the three. I mean, the Jeep is so uncivilized in everyday conditions and the G-Wagon is so expensive that I kind of have to lean towards the Defender. Mm-hmm. I'm really hoping that they'll do a proper SVR version.
We saw some spy shots of that. We think
that
might be happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that will really split the difference well. It'll mesh the best attributes of the G-Wagon with the Jeep. I would argue that the Defender was easily the most civilized on road.
Really? I would have thought it was the AMG.
Yeah. No, the AMG, I mean, the AMG is so boxy and so upright, and the suspension is so soft that a stiff breeze, It's not as stable as you would expect a vehicle like that to be. The Defender, though, was like a rock. I mean, I would road trip a Defender in a heartbeat, even a two-door model like that.
My experience in the G-Wagon has always been like, it's great. Like, I mean, and of course, most people buy them and sort of like drive them in town, like in cities, right? It's a cool car to see and be seen in and all that kind of stuff. And like, standard versus AMG tunes over the years really have less to do with kind of like what you want to get out of the car and more like, again, what you want to say about like what you're driving. But on the highway, on longer trips, and especially commuting in Southern Los Angeles or Southern California traffic, like not my favorite thing to be in. Same thing with the Jeep too. I guess my question is like, all of these cars are like super, they're recreational vehicles, right? And they're like this weird Uber strata of them. And you pointed out too, like, I think this is we're in kind of the last days. These are the halcyon days for like super powered, crazy off-roaders. Probably, certainly EVs are going to like come in and do some of this, but I just don't know. Like the Jeep makes the least sense to me, even though it's the cheapest, as like the one. I don't understand the person who wants the 392 version of the Wrangler, right? Unless they're just like completely wanting to front.
I mean, because
it's such a capable vehicle in Rubicon spec, right?
Honestly, I would if I were buying a Jeep today, and I wouldn't buy a Jeep because I'd buy a Bronco. But if I were buying a Jeep today, it'd be the 2 liter. The 2 liter in that car is so good, sublime. Right? It's really, really great. I haven't driven the diesel. I hear that's great, but I'd have the 2 liter in a heartbeat. Yeah, I mean the 392 is entirely pointless, but you could make the same argument about the Defender and about the G63. The G63 especially, because the standard G550 is so good.
Right.
I mean, you're buying the AMG tinsel at that point. So, yeah, I mean, I think that argument applies to all three, where it's like they don't necessarily make the most amount of sense. It's just you have money and you want to enjoy that you have money. And that's why you buy those vehicles.
Well, I think the G63 and the Defender V8, I mean, yes, they're ridiculously powerful. Yes, they're capable off-road. But I think they're also a little bit more built as you can use these on-road and still have a lot of fun and still have an enjoyable experience. Whereas Jeep with the Rubicon, it's an insane amount of power with big off-road tires where it's not going to offer quite the same experience on-road. Seth, I'm kind of with you. In fact, I remember when the 392 debuted. This was actually before you were back at Motor One. I caught a tweet where you were like, "Oh, I want my Wrangler to go 0-60 in 4.5 seconds." Like said nobody ever.
Right.
I mean, so here. Seems true.
But maybe on a dry lake bed, it makes sense.
Right.
Here's the thing. It was. The thing that the Jeep has going for it, and we didn't do this obviously for safety reasons, you can take the doors and the roof off the Jeep. Not that specific Jeep, because it had the Sky One Touch thing, which is basically the biggest panoramic sunroof on the market. It's really, really cool. It's also really, really expensive. But you take the roof and the doors off, and there's always going to be a fun novelty to that. In terms of launching it on the dry lake bed, I made a point of lining up in the same spot like for each run, and by the end of it, the Wrangler had dug like far deeper down into the lake bed than either of the others. Like tires, there was like a noticeable.
Oh yeah,
it was totally the tires. And I'll tell you this: if that thing didn't have 35-inch mud tires on it, if it had the Defender or the G-Wagon's tires on it, I think it would have won. Honestly,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think it was geared down so aggressively by the tires, but it launched harder. I mean, if you watch the video, and I haven't watched it in a little while, so I don't recall exactly, but like there are numerous cases where it's not just my reaction time being better or me jumping the start, which I may or may not have done. it was getting off the line quicker. It was responding sooner. It didn't have a turbocharger turbochargers that needed to spool up. And it had as much torque as maybe about the same amount of torque as the Defender. So, you know, I think the Jeep was really held back by those huge, huge tires. It's the lightest of the three. You know, if Jeep wants to do a 392 Trackhawk Wrangler with some decent rubber on there, like I'm on board. Like sign me up for that sacrilege.
An on-road devoted Wrangler.
Yeah. Hell yeah. That'll really rile up the purists.
It's wrong, but it's so right.
Can I just say though too, like one thing that struck me as we were putting this together, because this like I don't know, like the team brought this kind of like idea out and it seemed like it was going to be fun. Like it seems like it was going to be an amazing video. And I've got to emphasize to everybody, you've been seeing a little bit of this. If you haven't gone back and watched the video, watch the video. It's one of the best videos that I've seen the Motor One team put together, not just like in the short period of time that I've been back, but like ever. Like it's one of my favorite ones to watch. So I think it was incredibly well done. These guys went over and beyond to do like great piece, and it's a lot of fun. That being said, you know what was really impressive to me as we put this together? Every one of these automakers has a real significant reason to say no to this, right? If you're Mercedes, you say no because, like, how can we win? We're the most expensive. We're the Goliath in this challenge. If you're Jeep, you're like, how can we possibly win this drag race? We're gonna lose. Like, we have the smallest amount of power, and to Brandon's point, like, the wrong tires, right? If you're Land Rover, like, you know that you're sort of middle of the pack, and maybe they have the best incentive to say, like, there's a real reason to bring it out. It's a new product, but, like, everybody has a reason to say no, and yet everybody said yes because they know the point of these vehicles is abjectly to have fun in them, right? They mm-hmm. only exist because they're so much fun, they're so crazy, they're over the top. And I think, Brandon, I mean, you could say it, right? Like, they all absolutely succeed on that scale, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, a little bit of inside baseball, you know, I was out driving the new Range Rover a couple weeks ago. I got asked by the Land Rover PR people about this comparison. There's legitimate buy-in. Like, if you talk to Clint, who was just out at East Jeep Safari earlier this week, they are last week. God, the days are
none. It's 1 million years ago.
A million years ago.
2025, Brandon, wake up.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the Jeep people are legitimately invested by it. They're invested in it. There's real passion among these engineers and these product people and these marketing people about this comparison. And like Seth said, there's no good reason. Like, there, you know, every single one of these automakers could have looked this like been like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
But all of them were involved in it. All of them were super motivated. All of them, we didn't really talk about this much, but, like, we reached out to all these brands and asked them, like, hey, what is the best way to get these vehicles off the line? What do you recommend?
Right.
And all of them very forthright, very much like, well, do this, 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 and this. And it was passion from the automakers, from the engineers and the PR people and the designers and all the folks that are involved that we talked to. I think this drag race, the ability to do this, the fact that it made zero business sense for the automakers, speaks to one of the best things about the industry, is that people want to have fun in cars. And that extends from the line worker all the way up to the executive who is asking, hey, who won this silly little drag race that you guys did? That's been the most intriguing thing to me about this entire adventure, is the amount of buy-in that we've seen from automakers who, as Seth said, had no good reason to go ahead with this besides it being really fun.
Well, and I think the fact that this contest was done not on an airport runway somewhere, but on a lake bed, in an off-road setting, it makes sense for all of these vehicles to be there. I think it makes most sense for the Jeep, being billed as the Rubicon that it is. And I actually have a new respect for the Rubicon, seeing it out there. That's you were the slowest, Brandon. But I usually am. But no. But I mean, in this case, it's like it's still a win. It's like 100 miles an hour in a quarter mile isn't slow.
The crazy thing is
the slowest of this group. But it just, seeing it all come together, it just made sense. There aren't, I don't know if I've seen many videos, if any at all, featuring off-roaders like this actually off-road going fast. So,
you know. The crazy thing about it is, I'm not going to toot my own horn here a little bit, but, you know, I kind of said, like, you know, the Jeep is going to be the least manageable of this bunch. Like, let me drive that one. Like, let me take the risk. And we eased our way up. We did a lot of practice runs. We didn't need to. It was flawless. It was solid as a rock, you know, going 100 miles an hour with dust, like, I literally ate dust. I literally ate the AMG's dust. But at no point where I was like, oh my God, this is dangerous. I don't know what this car is going to do. It was solid as a rock. And that is a huge testament to Jeep's engineers, that a vehicle with solid axles and 470 horsepower and, like, useless tires for drag racing, felt so poised and so composed at 100 miles an hour on an uneven, dusty lake bed. Like, it's just like,
Motor One in no way endorses driving 100 miles an hour off road.
No, way. Don't do this.
There we go. That's our brand in this time.
I don't know.
That's not me and Bruce, that's Brandon this time.
We have insurance for just this reason. But yeah, I mean, it was it was staggering how composed. I mean, I would have handed this car to a 16-year-old kid and let him do the same thing and been entirely
let's not go too
no
far.
Motor1.com
does not condone handing a 470 horsepower Jeep to a 16-year-old kid.
No, I mean,
I'm
that
gonna,
was
I'm gonna jump in on that one, Seth.
It's that level of confidence that I had in it, which I think is a huge testament to how good it is. And I can only imagine, it's going to perform well in these conditions for just about anyone that has it. Obviously, be safe, use your head, but like, it's a crazy capable vehicle.
Cool.
One last question here, since we have these three vehicles, let's just go down the row here. You can take one of them home tomorrow. Brandon, are you choosing the Jeep?
No, no.
Which one are you choosing?
Probably a G550, not the G63, but probably a G550. I mean, you got to drive the things every day. And the Jeep is too uncivilized, and the Mercedes is too expensive, and the Defender is just a little bit too mild. A standard G550 is where it's at.
Okay. Seth, how about
you? I'll take the Auto Journalist cop out and pick one that's not available.
I'm in love with the Defender. I drove the standard. I drove the 110, and I love it. Defender all day long, twice on Sunday.
Okay. Bruce, how about you?
G63. Yeah.
I'm actually going to go with the Jeep, believe it or not. Okay. This drag race, you know what? It's not about being first. It's about having fun. And I suspect, and maybe this is my rally tastes coming through, but I suspect I would have more fun in the Rubicon than I would in the others.
I think the Jeep is objectively the most fun.
And there you go. Solid advice.
So,
or at least some fun advice.
Exactly. I think it's time to wrap things up for tonight, but we got to give our guests a chance to promote themselves. So Brandon, is there anything coming up that you think you want to tell people about? Anything that you've recently published, any social media stuff? Just have fun, man. Promote yourself.
I'm not good at the plugging. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brandon Turkus on Twitter, at B Turkus on Instagram. And I apologize now if you choose to take that advice.
Okay.
Rage tweets twice a week.
Seth, you get to promote yourself now. Is there anything coming up on Motor One that you really like? Anything that it's in the recent past you really like, or some sort of social media thing you want to promote? Go for it, man.
Please, please, please go watch this video, read this story. Oh, yeah. We haven't talked about the story. Brett Evans wrote an amazing written piece to go with the video. We've been talking a lot about the video shoot, which is great. You can check that out on the site. You can check it out on YouTube. Read the story. It went up today. It's incredibly well done. A lot of fun. The only thing I'm working on right now that's about halfway done is I'm writing a column about a road trip and an old Volkswagen Beetle. That one will be, I don't know when it's going to be done. It's going to be done. Brandon, tell me when I need to have it done next week. So
you tell me, man, you're the boss. Seth coming in here making me look bad, like actually promoting the site. I'm just like, please follow my brand.
Please follow.
At Seth, SEYTH on Twitter. You can follow me too. Been around forever.
And occasionally,
I write a lot about basketball.
And occasionally, Seth posts some questions that might show up in a future article. So if you want to be part of that, you can be part of that. And Seth also stole all of my shtick about going to read the article at Motor1.com, going to Motor1.com to see the drag race video, going to Motor1.com to see all of the debut articles of the vehicles we talked about here today, and many, many more. Going to Motor1.com just for your general automotive news. But go to Motor One Podcast on YouTube to check out our podcast going back over a year now. We're just cruising right along. Brandon, Seth, thank you both very, very much for joining us. Mr. Bruce, it's been a podcast, man.
Yep, it has. Real quick, kind of house cleaning thing. So right now, we have no guests for next week, but we have three scheduled for May. So, we'll have and I think all of them are new people. All of them will not be returning guests. They'll be newbies. So Look forward to that. So you'll get just Smith and I next week, more than likely, unless something changes. But then May, it'll be a whole lot of guests. So look forward to that. And you, as always, email us at podcast@motorone.com if you have any questions, comments, whatever. And other than that, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate all your feedback, all of your listens, all of just everything. We appreciate that you take the time out to listen to the show or watch the show on YouTube. So thank you for that. And with that, bye-bye.